Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. My name is Patty Sullivan. I was one of the PIOs on a team of people trying to get you information during the event. We did, as you hopefully know, have an emergency operations center up and running for 9 days. We just shut it down yesterday, and we want to continue that flow of information out to you by getting these subject experts right out in front of you so you can ask them questions after they present some really vital but practical information to you. So we're going to dive right in with our emergency manager. There he is, Casey Cook. He's going to give you an overview of what happened in the event. And after each person, we're going to hold questions until we get to the water area. Then I think we'll take some questions, and at the very end, we'll also take questions.
Thanks, Patty. So I was told I have to speak into the microphone, even though I really hate doing it. Can everybody hear me? No? How about now? Can you hear me now? I'm not a public speaking kind of guy. So I'm Casey Cook. I'm the emergency manager for the borough. And what I do is the preparedness and response for major disasters or disaster-type events. And so like Patty said, we've had our EOC up and running for 9 days. So last Sunday, or the Sunday before last, is when we started monitoring on a continual basis what was going on borough-wide. Our EOC was fully staffed on Tuesday morning when we realized that things were going to start happening. We just didn't know when they were going to start happening. Since then, we've had those positions and I think about 120 staff in and out of our EOC for the last 8 or 9 days. As you all know, we've experienced some flooding issues throughout the borough. We've responded to hundreds of calls for assistance and emergency type things during that time. We've activated a State of Alaska Type 2 incident management team to come and help us run this event. And then we've also been partnering with the State of Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management now that we've moved from a response phase into a recovery phase. I think during this event we've had 823 homes that were affected and 14 destroyed. That's our preliminary damage assessment that we've gotten so far. This number will most likely increase now that we're going to start going out home to home and getting people's applications for assistance as we open up those disaster assistance centers. And so we're expecting that to raise a little bit. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We're still responding. I was just out here in the Butte the night before last till 2:30 in the morning, making sure that some other things weren't happening that we were concerned about. And we'll continue to do that. The Department of Emergency Services, myself, I know several folks in the audience have my cell phone number so that when things start happening, they can call me directly. And we'll, if we need to come back out again, you know, we're always here 24/7 to come out and do that kind of stuff. And then the administrative side of this, now that we're moving into recovery, I'll be managing that too as well. So that's me.
Thank you, Casey. Up next, we have T. Little with the Department of Environmental Conservation talking about drinking water. T.
Can you hear me? No? Can you hear me now? Okay. My name is T. Little. I'm with the State of Alaska DEC Drinking Water Program, and I'm here to talk about disinfecting your wells and taking samples. I work with regulated public water systems, but certainly I can give you information on how to disinfect your well and then take samples. So I've brought some publications today. They're on the back table along with my business card. One of them is the Flood Preparation and Recovery for Drinking Water Systems. And then there's also a little pamphlet on how to disinfect your well and then another pamphlet on taking a sample properly. First, when you have this type of a situation, you want to make sure that the water recedes before you begin the disinfection process of your drinking water well and the distribution, what the pipes in your home. And there is no specific distance of having the water recede. In a public water system that's being regulated, the federal regulation and the state regulation is that all contaminants should be at least 100 feet away from the well. So I'm recommending having the water recede at least 50 feet from the well before you do your disinfection. when you disinfect your well, back there on the table again, the little plant float I brought has a brine mixture, if you will, of just using regular household chlorine. And you'll take the sanitary seal off your well and you'll pour that amount that it says there in the pamphlet down the well casing, and then use your garden hose to put water down the casing until you can start smelling that chlorine. Then after that, you'll turn the water off and you'll go inside and you'll begin opening all your faucets in your house. If you have a water softener, you need to bypass that first and open all the faucets until you can start smelling that chlorine. And then once you smell it, then turn it off. The pamphlet says wait 2 to 3 hours. We recommend 6 to 8 hours. So do this overnight when you're not using the water. Let it sit in the pipes for about 6 to 8 hours. And then in the morning, open up all the faucets and then flush those lines real well until you can no longer smell the chlorine. And then after you do that, then you can go ahead and take your sample, your coliform sample. And the borough is going to be providing those sample bottles for you so they can make sure that they get it to the lab and get that analysis for you. So you had a question, ma'am? Yeah.
Down your drain.
No, you'd open up your faucet.
The flushing.
Oh, yeah, the flushing part, yeah, okay.
Just a warning, don't put it down your sewer system.
Well, some of it's going to end up there,
don't flush it out. Get it flushed out your hose as much as you can. Then run through the house till the chlorine's gone, but not to run it in the house until the chlorine's gone. Because that's a lot of water.
It is a lot of water.
Into a possibly challenged septic system.
You are correct. That is correct. So is there the gal here today to talk about taking that sample? Okay. So Lori's going to talk about when you take the sample and you fill out all the paperwork. But there is some information back there. My business card is back there. If you have any questions, please feel free to call our office. If I'm not available, somebody will be available to help you with questions that you may have. My office number is 376-1860. Yes.
Do you do another test besides just the back tea?
I'm not really sure. I don't. If you're talking about a private well, the state doesn't have any jurisdiction over private wells, so that would be your call to make. If you decided to do that, you can certainly call us, and we can kind of run you through question and answer to determine maybe what type of monitoring you'd want to do. Okay? Okay.
Any other questions? We have a mic there. Raise your hand. Then I can rush the mic over to you so everybody can hear your question. Besides, I need the exercise.
Okay.
Thank you, T. We also have on the Matsu Borough YouTube website a video of T and some of the other presentations that were at Talkeetna 2 nights ago, if you want to hear that again. Up next, we have Lori Moffitt. She's our safety manager at the borough, and she's going to talk about the water test kits.
Patty, can you hear me? Good enough. These are the sample bottles that you'll use to do your home test kits after you do the shock chlorination that T was speaking of to your well. There's also a chain of custody, and on the chain of custody, there's six simple steps to collecting a sample and not cross-contaminating it. So it's really important that you follow these steps step by step and that you do the shock before. Otherwise, if the sample is contaminated, obviously it's no good, and they're very expensive. They're about $50 a pop. The borough is providing them free. We'll get them to the lab, too. They are time sensitive. So after you've put the water in the bottle and sealed it back up, we have to have it to the lab within 24 hours. So we will have these staged at the fire station. For pickup, the lab can only handle 25 at a time going out, so we'll have to take them out in steps. How many here are on private wells? So it sounds like the borough may be able to, once your water's beyond the 50-foot mark, how about if I'll give you my phone as well as you have T's and you have Casey's. We'll come out and we'll actually take your samples for you if you give us a call, and we'll try to do it in one big sweep, take your samples, make sure they're not contaminated, and then we'll run them back to the lab for you. So we'll give you our business cards and make sure that we get that all coordinated with all of you, and we'll offer that service to you. So if you have any questions now or afterwards, whatever's good. 354-4197. All right, thanks.
Thanks so much. Next up, we've got with the Department of Transportation, Steve Bancy. He is in charge of maintenance and operations in Palmer, and he was overseeing what was going on during the disaster response. Steve, and also with him is Rick Feller, a PIO for this region for DOT. Thanks,
Patty. Hi, my name's Rick Feller. I'm public information officer and public liaison for DOT's Central Region. 35-year resident of the Valley, but I still commute in Anchorage to work. Steve Bancy will follow me. He's the one that's been in the trenches doing all the work. He'll give you a much more detailed run-up of where we stand today. I'll give you a brief overview and then get out of Steve's way. So starting on the 19th, when the flood water started rising and really presenting a clear and imminent threat to our highway system, that's when Steve and his crew started springing into action. Since then, our current numbers, or earlier numbers from today, was that region-wide we responded to 109 areas of concern between the 19th and today. Within the MATSU, we visited 71 different areas of concern, all the way from Cascade to Shulitna. And certainly happy to say that during all that time and during all the challenges that we faced, Steve and his crews were able to maintain our mainline highway system online without interruption, and that was quite an accomplishment. So with that, I'll turn it over to Steve for some more detail.
I'd like to just give you a little more detailed information. Like Rick said, starting on the 19th, we first found out we were going to have some problems. We didn't know how bad they were at that time. I had gotten a phone call in the middle of the night from our Cascade foreman, and we had landslides and rock slides coming down more than regular. We normally get a few rocks up at Long Lake, but nothing like what we were getting. And then also our foreman at Willow called us, and Shorty Creek had jumped out of its banks up on the Willow Fishhook Road and had washed the road out. And so that was kind of the beginning. And then from there on, we had mudslides at Caribou Creek. And then, of course, probably most of you here know what happened on Thursday with the Matanuska River jumping out and coming right up alongside of the road. And we did some work there on the side of the road, protecting the roadway there by Maud Road. And then we also had some flooding going on at the same time at the Little Sioux, the Little Willow, Goose Creek, which are all up in the Willow area. Then we found out we were having problems with the bridge over at Moose Creek, out at 50 Mile in the Glen, and the flood was washing out one side of the bridge abutment on that, and then also King River on up farther. We had a problem there with the whole river jumping out of its banks there. And, of course, then that next day, by Saturday, Talkeetna had that wall of water come down, and the town was flooded, and we did have to do some ditching out at the airport to drain water away from part of the state facilities there at the airport. And by Sunday, the water started receding in most places. Currently, we're still working on Caribou Creek. Most of it's clean up now. And either that or it's just building things up so that just in case we get some more high water between now and winter, we can make sure that it won't come out of its banks again. And Caribou Creek, we've got King River. We're still doing work there. We're still doing work up in Hatcher Pass, trying to get that road in a little better condition. The only two roads we actually lost for a while was up the Hatcher Pass Road on the Willow side, and then Petersville Road washed out for a while. And then Moose Creek, we're still working on Moose Creek. And then we have other numerous small washouts and culvert problems that we're trying to get fixed. So, and if anybody has any questions, you need to call DOT. Our phone number is 745-2159.
Hi, Pat Huddleston here. What type of work are you going to be doing over by all of us here in the Butte to help us on our road?
Right now we're monitoring the road. We don't really have a problem with the road at this time. So, but if it looks like we're going to start losing our road again, then we'll do what we have to do to save it.
I've got a question. Why are all the people in the Butte required to have a floodplain permit, and Frankie Barker says right here, and I have a copy of it, they are not in the floodplain or an erosion zone? Why is that? I have this. This is on paper right here.
I don't know. I'm not aware of what you're talking about.
I want
about.
An answer.
Thanks. That's not a road question. We'll bring up. Okay, we'll stick to roads then.
I'd like to know why none of us from mile 15 to 13 got culverts on any culverts on our side, because we live on the river. However, up at 13, there's an overflow spout crossing the opposite way of the bike path. I would like to know, is that kind of like premeditated? Is it to, why didn't we get culverts? What place in a whole of Alaska, in any town that has a highway through there that has roads coming off of it, does not have culverts where the driveways come and attach to it? Why didn't we not get culverts? When the people were doing the road a couple years ago, I asked a gentleman who was on the road with his little clipboard, and I said, where's our culverts? He says, you're not getting any. We were told not to give you any. Why is this?
I'm not aware of why that would be. Could you tell me again what area that is? Could you tell me again what area that is?
Where mile 15 to mile 13. Everybody in that straight stretch there. Maud, if they can't tell what milepost, I'm sorry, they don't need to have the job they're in. Mile 15 to mile 13. I want to know why none of us homeowners on that straight stretch got culverts on the riverside, but everybody on the other side of the highway and each end all got culverts, both sides. Why is that? I want an answer to that. Because we would not have had the damage in which we have if the state or Department of Highways would have put those in. We all got flooded because we didn't. Is it because they're supposed to let our little roads, our driveways, use as temporary blocks for our diking there until it reaches the overflow spout up by the swamp on the corner of 13? 12-5?
I just, I don't know the answer to that question right now.
On the job training, but crews who did the job. Why
crews,
did
Stewart Angwars.
Yeah. Why Stewart, did crews put it in?
It was Stewart Angwars.
Lowest bidder. Because Wild Construction, number one, when they came through.
Pat, thank you very much. We're going to talk with you after that, and we'll get an answer for you.
This came through, and they told us that all that gravel, that road was built in 1940s. Okay, that's the original Alcan Alaska Highway. They said all that highway material had to be removed, and they wanted to know who all wanted it because it's uncertified gravel underneath our highway there. I want to know answers, and I want them.
Okay, we are going to get you those, all right? So let's move on to the next question.
I think more than anything, us along that river want to know
We want to know if there's going to be anything done or if we need to move our houses out of there.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do something, it's going to happen again and again.
Yeah.
It might before the night's over, and either something's got to be done, or we need an answer that we can move our houses.
They don't know. They didn't know last time. They still don't know.
I mean, you're going to riprap the highway. You're going to riprap the highway if you don't riprap the river.
Okay, so a couple things. Now that, and I've the time that I spent out in the Butte this summer, we've started working on that. You know, I've been talking with Pat and the Shavers and the Winters about mitigation and how mitigation works. So as the river comes closer, we don't want that type of stuff to happen to homeowners or property owners. We don't want it to hit the road. We don't want you guys to have to move your homes or be stuck somewhere where you're going to have to be rescued. That was a process we started. Now that a disaster has occurred, that opens up. Hold on, let me finish before you get mad. That opens up different avenues of funding for mitigation to help prevent something like this from happening again. It's a process that we started back in June, and we were in the process of doing when this occurred. And so we're now that we've got other options for that mitigation, so yes, so we will be looking at mitigation to stop the river from coming in, from hitting homes, and from hitting rivers. We're doing it now, and so then when we determine what type of mitigation that would fit the best, we'll be contacting homeowners to say, is this something that you would be interested in participating in?
We have an old dike there. It's coming in on the wrong side of it right now.
Right.
And you guys are saying we're in the process. The process isn't going to happen. It's going to wipe us all out. It's going to go crest here pretty quick. How far? Somebody around here knows how close before it. Once it does it there, it's going to cross my property and take everybody else with it on the wrong side of the dike. All you got to do is get somebody in there to fix it. That's it.
Okay, so I understand, but hold on a second. Hold on. Just wait. Just wait a second. Myself and all of the people up here don't make those policy and responses. And so I can't answer that as to when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen. All I can tell you is that we are working on it, and we're working on that procedure to get it done.
We've got some people back here that have their hand raised. So let's kind of take these in order, if we may, please. Let everybody get a chance.
Yeah, around June, when those two homes started to be threatened right there before Maud Road and the bridge, Mersch, Shaver, Wiener, those properties were up for sale between 209 and 212. They're also identified as erosion areas next to this map that was created in 203 to put that road in. Can the DOT give any good reason for not having purchased those properties so they would have had access to that land in order to prevent erosion? And when I contacted Steve on September 14th or 15th and said, why can't the DOT purchase this property after I'd spoke with the Mershes, I got nothing back except go to the State Department of DOT Commissioner's office and I find out he had resigned. But at some point, that property was easily available. Why couldn't the DOT purchase it and keep this damage being done from that highway and having ownership when the opportunity arises after having already identified the problem in 203?
Thank you. Thanks for the question. So I don't have specific knowledge of that specific instance because I didn't work on the project, but I can tell you what is typical. So typically for a road project, we acquire right-of-way that's necessary to build, operate, and maintain the road. That's all that we are authorized to acquire, and that's typically all that's acquired for any road project. So anything outside the boundaries of the specific road project that we're building to operate and maintain, that's not something that can be done as part of a typical construction project. Well, ma'am, once again, the project acquired the right-of-way necessary to build, operate, and maintain the road. And as you saw during this... Again, DOT's authority lies with the transportation system. And as you could see during this flood event, we were able to design, build, operate, and maintain a road that did survive this flood event.
Excuse me, ma'am. Ma'am, I've been with the Circle View service area for over 10 years. And no, but listen, I have gotten a lot of education. I'm just saying, and we fought this. Because we have erosion, we don't have flooding. Erosion is not included in the floodplain.
Correct.
Okay? So we've worked hard, but I have a question for that. Whatever your name is, Chris, right? Casey. I have a couple questions, and I know Frankie Barker and I are going to work on this. But my understanding is the flood stage was at 12 feet. This did not even make flood stage. Is that going to cause these people trouble collecting? Because this was a flood. It came to dry land. But, I mean, because we've gone through this over and over with the flood, but that flood stage needs to be lowered. The other question I have, because I will be very upset, if the borough or the state or whoever helps these people without a service area, We are taxing ourselves to protect our property. And yes, our dikes held out during this flood. So I'm just saying, if you want to mitigate the river, then we all have to work together.
I agree with that. So Frankie's not here to answer the...
Frankie.
Oh, she is here. Oh, there she is. Why aren't you up here? So we have our floodplain managers at the borough, and they'll be able to answer that high water mark and flood stage mark well better than I can. So, okay? Go ahead.
And we're going to keep to the agenda because we do have to get done. So we're going to go through one more question, and then if we could go back to the agenda, get the rest of the speakers, so then we can get to questions and answers because some of your questions might be answered by the future speakers, okay?
I'm Ron Smith, and a business owner and a resident for many years here in the Butte area. There's a tremendous amount of knowledge, wisdom, and experience in this room, and a lot of frustration, and yet I understand your folks' effort, and I respect that, but there doesn't seem to be a level of transparency and involvement with the community input before we come out and make these announcements from the state and the local borough. And you mentioned processes. Is there anything being considered right now for the borough and the state to take in some of this local knowledge and support that you folks might do well by listening to and soliciting to give yourselves more transparency rather than just coming out and having to deal with the frustration that many people are having to do on their own individually where part of your service could be provided to help with that? Is that being considered at all?
Yes. The short answer is yes.
That was the one question. Second question is, are you considering harvesting the gravel from that river to help with a revenue generation program?
I know that was discussed at the meeting last week or the week before, whenever that was. That's not an answer that I have as emergency, so that's a finance. And I hate to say go somewhere else and ask that question. I know that the state was looking at it, and the commissioners that were there at that meeting are looking at it. It hasn't trickled down to me yet to answer that question. So, your first question is yes, there will be that transparency because if we do any mitigation, all of the property owners and the homeowners have to be involved in that because they have the option to say, no, that's not going to work for me. This would work for me, and going on from there.
After you develop your plan or before, while you're developing the plan?
We'll come up with different options, and this is the first time I've worked this side of a disaster like this, and so if that's, since I'm managing it, then it'll be before. Does that answer your question? So I will be out here. I will be getting input as to what is going to work for you guys out here in Butte.
So how are you going to, I'm trying to understand how you're going
to
approach
it. If it's like this and having community meetings or coming out to your house one by one and meeting with you to say, what would you like to see? Here's what we can do if it's been approved for mitigation, and I will take that information. Okay? All right.
Up next, we've got Sean O'Neill, our Public Works Director, talking about the local roads and repairs to them.
I'm Sean O'Neill, the Public Works Director for the Borough, and I had the dubious pleasure of being the Public Works branch section chief something at the operation, the Emergency Operations Center. I took many, many calls from many, many people before we got to the Butte. I live the other side of the Butte off the Old Glen Highway. We took care of making sure roads were barricaded when the Old River Road got underwater, when Maud Road washed out. We helped to make sure people didn't go swimming in the newly formed river that runs along the Glen Highway now. So that's what we do is roads and bridges. And we had, just for a little overview, at the most, we had 40 roads that were closed during the flood. We have hundreds of miles of roads that are destroyed. We have hundreds of miles of roads that are just damaged. We have a couple bridges that are not going to get opened this year. We opened a couple bridges that were under construction so that people would have access to their homes. We still have probably 40 people that can't get to their house because we have 7, I believe, roads that are still closed because they washed out so severely. In the big picture, we, the people that live in the Butte, came out lucky, but that doesn't mean individually that we came out lucky. I mean, I did. The water came to my front door, but then it stopped and didn't come inside to visit. So my chickens now have webbed feet, but I still have a dry floor, which I'm very appreciative of, and I also appreciate that some of you don't have that luxury, that you're still mucking out the silt in your living rooms and boiling your water. So as far as what the borough is doing on roads and bridges in this area, we're doing assessments. We're working with the mitigation people that Casey spoke of to come up with ideas for how to keep this from happening again, and we're looking at it throughout the borough. I've got a guy from the state, he's got the big long acronym, basically Homeland Security Emergency Management Public Assistance Mitigation Leader, and his whole purpose is to look at what happened before, look at what happened this time, what did we do good last time, what did we do bad last time, what can we do different next time, or between this time and next time, so that this time doesn't happen again. And so when Casey talked about the mitigation plan and what's going to work for the people that live here, that's the kind of thing that me and my department will also be involved in. We've got the road, the road service guys. Marty is very popular around here, I'm sure, and the rest of the people on the RSA board that helped give me input and information on what works for the roads that we drive on versus what works for the people, that live on paved roads and drive on downtown. I know that it's different. So the mitigation, what can we do different so that this doesn't happen again? And I know there's a wealth of knowledge and information out there from people that have lived out here a lot longer than I have and people that have seen this happen once or twice or three times. And so by whatever mechanism works, we'll be harvesting that knowledge and information before anything concrete happens. And while that can be frustrating when you're talking about the water that's running around the backside of the dike right now, the whole God willing and the cricks don't rise, that's a big a big part of what we're hoping for, because we don't want to do the wrong thing in the meantime, and we don't want to do something that's going to wash out or something that's going to flood somebody else because it's in the wrong place. So I don't know. You know, we don't have the right answers, but between all of us here, we're the little half of the room. You guys are the big half of the room. So between all of us, I think we'll come up with the right answers. And because the event occurred, like Casey said, we are open to a lot of new avenues of funding that were not available before. And that's what it always boils down to. We get the budget cuts. The state doesn't want to spend money here. We don't have access to federal funds. We're all looking at higher taxes. And so this unfortunately does open a whole new pot of money. And so we're working within the system to document, say things the right way so that we can maximize the opportunities and the funding options that are going to come down our way. Because there are rules attached to... The question was, why don't we have access to federal funding? I don't know if everybody heard that. And because there are rules attached to the kinds of federal funding, we don't have Uncle Ted in the Senate anymore, and so we don't get the earmarks that we got a lot, unfortunately. Most of the federal funding comes through the state, and the state has their own priorities, and so we don't get to do all of the things that we think, you know, are important. And on the big federal priority list, fixing the dike along the Glen River is really little until something bad happens, and then it becomes very big. So that's why we now have access to money we didn't have before.
Oh, excuse me. Ron Smith again. It really disappoints me that we're waiting for federal funding. There's a lot of us in the communities, and there's a tremendous amount of business owners and individuals that would rally together and contribute to this. Back when Alaska was a territory and in early years of statehood, we didn't wait for federal funding. A lot of us got together, a lot of the families got together, and they contributed things that provided some real good end results. And that Mananuska River at one time was managed by the people in the communities here. It was, the gravel was harvested in the 50s and throughout the 60s, and there were a lot of constraints put up to block some of the erosion. And it wasn't done with state, and it wasn't done with federal dollars. Are you considering people's input and solicitation, participation to accomplish things like that? I mean, I guess what I'm really wondering to know is that the heartfelt intent of the borough and the state to get behind and preserve this valuable land that we have, or are we going to continue to let it erode like we've watched for over 20 acres of road since I've been a young man? So what is your opinion of what direction are we going here?
My opinion is that I'm a borough resident. I'm a borough employee. My job is to make this the place of choice to live, work, and play. And so if I can use the support, I'm a grassroots person. I grew up at the end of a dirt road on North Pole, Alaska, in a house with a dirt floor where the neighbors did. We did what we needed to do what we needed to do. And we didn't depend on the state or the feds or the borough. And the house that I grew up in, my folks are still there, and it's still that way. And so that is my mindset. I'm the public works director for the Mat-Su Borough, so if I can gain community support and we can do it sounds a little facetious, but it's heartfelt, a kumbaya effort where we all join together and we all do what's right for the community, then we're all going to benefit. We all have ownership. We all buy into it. We all make it work, and it belongs to everybody. And that's my approach of choice. And so if this community feels that way, then by all means, we will get together on a community level and do what we can do. And working for the borough, I can help facilitate the red tape and the kind of permitting and the things that you have to do these days to work in a waterway. You know, with my, you know, we, the government, can do that for you, the people.
Well, what you just said, you know, the requirements nowadays to work in the waterways is the problem in my mind. I've been to a lot of these, and that guy's exactly right. I've been to a lot of these meetings in the past dealing with this river. That river hauls a lot of gravel from that channel, and up above Poland there's no escape. The only escape is past that bridge, so eventually it's going to fill itself up to where it is above the road. That river level at the back of our place that normally floods in high water was never underwater in this time, in this flood. So he's right. The dredging that channel is something that a lot of people have been tried, and it's just not possible.
And that is a permitting issue that, like Casey said, was brought up at the meetings earlier last week and the week before. And even through the rumblings, you know, I've been dealing with flood for 10 days. And even with what we're dealing with, that's the here and now, I do know that people are talking about that and taking it more seriously than this spring, for example. I believe that, you know, the mayor's in support of that, and there are several assembly members that are exploring that option, and people are looking into it. So it's not being discounted. It just can't happen today.
The problem being is the state, okay, because they charge too much to take the gravel out of the river. We have a letter from DNR that came a couple years ago, and they wanted to charge too much, but they gave us permission to take gravel out of the river, to move the gravel around and do all this. But it was too expensive. So that's where you have to work with, is get the state on board with this and our community. And then, I mean, you can have a great tourist attraction out there.
Can I just jump in here? We do have a staffer representing Representative Stoltz, and we also have in our midst here Warren Keough, our assembly member, who can talk about some of the options that have been discussed. Warren?
It's the frustration here on the ongoing issue with the Mat River is pretty plain. This effort is to deal with the aftermath of the current situation, but the questions and issues that are raised here by Mr. Smith and Ms. Hummel and Ms. Huddleston and others, how do we fix the problem that we have? How do we deal with this river? And I think one of the things that have come out of this meeting just coincidentally a week and a half ago was a more recent recognition of the problem. We have to do something. So what are some of the things that we can do? There's been frequent mention of dredging the river as the cure-all to the fix has been done in the, you know, in the 50s and 60s. And that's one option. Another option is to armor or riprap the banks of the river to keep it from eroding further into the highway or people's properties. There's also the option of dike construction, of which there are five dikes. Linda Smith mentions there the Circle View and Stampede Estates flood and erosion program that they have there, where that community taxes itself to make sure that their property is protected. There's also another mitigation would be to purchase property, and that's something that's been done in the past as well. So all of these things have been done in the past of some way, shape, or form. But the problems continue to exist. So I think one of the things that came out of this meeting here 10 days ago that was led by Representative Stoltz with the attendance of a lot of agency heads is the need for representatives from the state elected officials like Representative Stoltz and whoever the next senator will be for this for the Butte area. Representatives, elected officials from the borough, like myself, and the mayor, and agency reps with expertise in the issue to sit down and come up with a plan that, one, that will work, and two, that is affordable. There's been several comments about funding. Whatever we do to make the fix, it ain't going to be cheap. Whether it's dredging, riprap, armor, dike construction, repair the revetment. There are no cheap fixes to this. So, but as also was mentioned too, the fact that we have a disaster here that's been declared by the borough manager and by the state, that does open a lot of funding doors that can make some things happen now or in the near future that haven't been affordable or able to do because of lack of funding in the past. So, yes, sir.
Does the borough or the state have any qualified, competent engineers that can do a cost-benefit analysis of all the variable options that you just discussed? Then we can lay them out, and then it's hard to argue with those kind of facts. And if it's done properly, it'll lay out all these variables and what it truly costs. Yes. I disagree with your opinion that it's going to cost a tremendous amount of money to harvest the gravel out of that over the long term. There's people that I spoke with through my association with AGC and other organizations that were very interested in that until they got some of the information back from the cost from the state. But I also understand there's things in the works right now to mitigate that or reduce that cost. So all these things really, in all honesty, are going to bear truth if the work were done on them and laid them out to the people in a proper format, just rather than just opinions, in which I'm sure all of us have a lot of those. But
to your question, is there expertise out there? Yes, there is. Have some studies been done in the past? Yes, there have. Regarding the issue of dredging, there has been some state legislation passed this past year that makes it easier to do dredging in the river. I would say, however, that one of the issues here, and as somebody, I don't live in your community. I live in a different part of the district, so I haven't had to deal with the flooding here on the lower Mat River. But one of the things that as somebody coming in and looking at this from the outside is I'm kind of stymied and amazed by the multiple jurisdictions that we have to try to deal with a problem like this, just from a matter of jurisdiction. So we have state DNR that owns the bed of the Matanuska River, and they own the gravel. We have DEC that has much to say with the water in the river. We have the Corps of Engineers that has the authority over dredging of the river. We have ADF&G who has some authority over fish that run up and down the river. The borough is a player in this, but what is their role exactly? Well, we're the local government. So there's a variety of local government, state government, and federal government agencies. So it's not like one entity is in charge of everything. You have these multiple jurisdictions. I just mentioned this to say this is one more thing that complicates the issue of making some kind of fix to the Mat River. But I would invite you, if you're willing to participate, and others too, to sit down in an effort with some of us elected officials at the borough or state level and other agency folks with expertise to come up with a plan. And now maybe Darrell, Representative Stolstaff, would have something to say.
I'm Darrell. I'm with Representative Stolstaff's office. We held the meeting that was here 10 days ago for the very purpose of trying to get all the different agencies that Assembly McKeo just mentioned, various state agencies. Too often we found, and what we found with the erosion that was happening this year in our conversation with state agencies, is the different agencies weren't really communicating with each other and weren't really communicating with local and even federal agencies and government. There's several issues involved with the river, and while it was easy 40 years ago to go out there and just do it yourself, since then the federal government has passed the Clean Water Act, which makes it difficult for you even to wade in the river. That's an issue that has to be overcome as far as dredging and dealing with that. Our goal with our meeting 10 days ago was to start the conversation with the borough officials, with several people sitting up here and trying to answer your questions, with the assembly members, with Representative Stoltz and other elected officials, so we can find an answer. We started that conversation. That conversation was interrupted by weather and a flood. Our goal, now that the weather has subsided and the flood is done, is to renew that conversation again and try to find a solution. Is it easy? No. Can we answer it tonight? I wish we could. It's going to take some time. I think Casey mentioned, and Moore mentioned, the more involvement we have from the residents who are impacted and who live along this river, the better we can find a solution the better it will be, easier it will be, and better it will be for us to find a solution that benefits everyone who lives along the river and try to preserve your homes. That's our goal.
I wanted to get back to the agenda and talk about funding and individual assistance, and we can take more questions after we have one more speaker. And that would be Becca Lopez. She's with Individual Assistance. She's the branch chief with the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. You're going to have a center is open on October 4th and 5th at your fire hall where people who have experienced loss can apply, and Becca is going to talk about that.
Hi, my name is Becca Lopez. I work for the State of Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. I'm an individual assistance branch chief. I hear tonight that what's heavy on your mind and your hearts is about what my partners in the public assistance do, which is infrastructure, roads, rivers, maintenance, that kind of thing. I am not familiar enough with their programs to talk about that tonight, but I will be taking back everything that you guys are concerned with and making sure that my leadership is addressing it as soon as possible for you. But tonight I really want to talk about individual assistance. The reason that I come out first is because usually people cannot concentrate on how to get their infrastructure back in place until their homes and their families are better off. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I'm very nervous talking in front of people, so if I start shaking, just ignore it, please. We have on the back table our brochures, and it has some information on there that you will want to take and be able to refer back to that I'll be talking about tonight. Our phone number is on here. And then also I'm going to give you an 800 number for applying for disaster assistance. And it will be open on October 3rd. The 800 number is 1-855-445-7131. That will also be the same phone number if anybody is hearing impaired and needs to use a TTY. It's 855-445-7131. Also, there should be these flyers back on the back table for you. If we run out, please let us know. We also will be having Red Cross. We'll be handing them out throughout the areas for the next couple days. So our Disaster Assistance Center will be taking applications. We have 60 days from the time of a declaration by the governor to take applications in. The declaration was last Friday. So we'll be out here at the Butte Fire Station October 4th and 5th. If you miss us in person there, you can always apply online on the phone, that 800 number, or you can come. We'll also be doing another one in Wasilla on the 11th and the 12th. And the reason that it's a little bit spread out is because we have multiple centers going on because we have a very large area that was affected. We're going up to Tanacross next week. We're going out to Talkeetna and Willow, Wasilla and here, and then we'll be going down to the Kenai Peninsula Borough to help those people also. Did you have a question for me? We'll be the 11th and 12th in Wasilla.
Where?
It's going to be at the fire station at the corner of Seward Meridian and Palmer Wasilla Highway.
Okay. Are you going to have any for the Fishhook area? Wasilla Fishhook?
They'll need to come to that Wasilla one, or you can also call on the phone. So our program, what we cover, sorry, I've given out my phone numbers. We cover things like personal transportation. We cover if your main transportation, your only transportation, was damaged or destroyed. We can cover that, helping you repair it, helping you replace it. We cover personal property that are essential for life. So we cover things like lamps and couches and other kitchen gadgets that you need to be able to function, and clothing. Did you have another question?
Building to put it in?
We also do repairs. So let me finish my little spiel, and then what I miss, you guys can ask. But we also We cover damage to property, to your home, to your driveways, to any access points. That's why we cover driveways, as it's an access. So your door jams, your property, your personal property, and your structure, your primary residence. So if you are in a home that you cannot stay in because it is uninhabitable, we also help with renter's assistance. So if you are a renter, we can do up to 3 months of renter's assistance to get you in a new place. If you are a homeowner, it's your primary residence, you have to evacuate, then we can put you up, help you with renter's assistance for up to 18 months. And for structure damage, we can only do for primary residence. So if you are a homeowner, it's your primary residence, you reside in it, then we can help you repair that home. Now, there is a limit to my program. My program, we have an IFG program. It's individual family grant. That is capped at $15,700. So if you are repairing things, you need to make sure you're documenting them. You need to take pictures. You need to make a list of everything that you're having to get rid of because it was soaked and it was damaged. You need to make a list, take photos, document everything. Keep receipts if you're having to replace something. Keep the receipts and bring that all in with you to our disaster. I'm going to call it a DAC. That's the best way for me. Sorry. Disaster Assistance Center. It's our DAC. That's the 4th and 5th. Bring all of that in, your documentation, your photos, your photo ID, your proof of ownership of the property. You're going to bring in, if you are a renter, bring in something that shows that you occupy the residence. And then that way we can help you. If you're a renter, we do personal property. If your landlord needs to get assistance, my program doesn't cover that, but we are trying to obtain that information. Small businesses, my program does not cover that, but we are trying to get that information as well. So if you know of people who have damage, let us know. The number one mistake we find is people do not let us know that they need help. Just because your neighborhood was affected doesn't mean that we know you were affected. It doesn't mean we know who to contact to say, hey, we have this assistance out here. We want to help you. So make sure you're telling your neighbors. Make sure you guys are calling Red Cross. You're calling your Matsu Borough. We're working heavily with Matsu Borough to make sure that nobody is overlooked as much as we can. But we really need you guys to step up and let us know who needs assistance. Let us know you need it. Tell your neighbors. Everybody is welcome to come in. And we'll help them the best we can. We have lots of agencies that we work with, partners we do. So if you don't follow my program, we're going to try to refer you to somebody who can help. So everybody come in and give us your information. Let us sit down and walk through what is available for you. It'll be the 4th and 5th. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about mold because you guys did have flood damage. When you are drying things out, heat can grow bacteria and it can grow mold. So you want to get the air flowing, but you don't necessarily want to heat the area that you're trying to dry. You want to get all of that out. Make sure you're taking photographs of the damage. Make sure you're documenting what you're getting rid of. If you're replacing it, make sure you keep your receipts. Documentation is very important. I'm going to have my partner, Jeremy, come up here and talk to you a little bit about the mold.
So just to touch on something, Becca mentioned the Red Cross. So they called and asked me today to put out as well that on tomorrow and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, they'll be opening up one of their disaster assistance centers as well. And so if you need, you know, it's basically household things, clothes, that type of stuff. So they're opening up that to help people as well. And that's the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church is on the corner of Bogart and Main Street, right there in Wasilla. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
So we touched on this a little bit, but I'll just reiterate the importance of getting rid of all that flood damaged material, carpets, drywall, insulation, ripping that stuff out and getting rid of it. In in flood situations in the past, we've seen when people haven't done that, that mold, the mold will really get into their home and cause a lot of damage and make the home unlivable or cause some serious health problems down the road. So we are very concerned about that. As Becca said, please document those damages. That really helps us in a lot of different ways. It helps us help you with our individual assistance programs to get you some funds. You may look at something and say, that I don't really want to claim that. I'm going to claim something else. That something else might be ineligible, but the thing that you didn't document in the first place, it is eligible. So please document everything. Also, we work with a tremendous number of volunteer agencies, and we really do amazing things, and there's places like Crooked Creek where we've been able to rebuild homes, and that wouldn't have been possible without those volunteers. So we're very well connected with volunteer agencies, and they do tremendous work. So please tell us all of the damages that you've had. If we don't have a program or we don't have a state partner that can address that problem, we may be able to find another agency to do that. It also helps us if we decide as a state to go and seek a federal disaster declaration to have a good damage assessment. It makes it a lot easier when we take all of that information to the federal government to try to get that federal disaster declaration. With the current federal budget atmosphere, we're not sure if the purse strings are going to be tightened. So please, one of the ways you can help us help you is to go into the DAC and really give us a thorough assessment of what's been damaged. Another thing Becca hit on was the November 20th deadline. Many times when that deadline comes and goes, someone will see that their neighbor is receiving their individual assistance, and they'll come to us at that point, and unfortunately we cannot help them. The deadline for applying has passed, and the application period has closed. We want to help everyone that we can to the maximum amount that our program allows, but without that application, our hands are tied. So please, fill those out. If you have relatives, friends, neighbors, even someone that you don't like very much and you think that they haven't applied, please let them know so we can reach out to them, or they can reach out to us, and we can document their damages. And then finally, we've set up a website. It has a lot of different flood information. It's flood.alaska.gov, and it has mold remediation, dealing with mold documents. We have some of them on the back table there. Rebuilding your home after a flood information, how to deal with sewage indoors and outdoors, and some other documents on there, how to treat water and that type of thing. So is there any questions?
I have a question. I don't know if Patty needs to answer it or not, but and you guys are from the state, so maybe you're part of this. The state, FEMA, our flood manager, it used to be Tawny Boothby, and I'm not sure if she still is. Why is she not here today?
I am the borough floodplain manager, one of them, and I am here to talk to you folks, and I'll talk to you as soon as Jeremy's finished.
Yes, I'm curious. The date of the actual flood event, I believe, was the 19th. The days prior that precipitated the flood was wind and rain. Over two-thirds of my property was flooded. Fortunately, I was high and dry where my house was, but 2 days prior, had three trees come down. One hit my house. Another took out my truck. Is there any assistance in this program that might help me prior to the 19th that flood event actually occurred, that I could sort of wrap? Fortunately, my
my homeowner's insurance is taking care of that. My truck's a total loss. That's beside the point. But I have trees that are cracked, literally splintered all the way up, that I'm having to come out of pocket to have removed because they're a threat. You know, the wind's not gonna stop.
Yeah, the wind event is included in the disaster deck. It's the wind event that I believe, actually I think that the event that hit Anchorage hard kind of the week before is included in that as well. So the Tanacross up above Toke there was hit especially hard by the winds before it began to flood in South Central, and we're going to be establishing a disaster assistance center there and going through the whole individual assistance process. So I'm trying to recall the exact dates of those, but I'm drawing a blank. I do believe that the wind damage directly preceding the flood is included.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yes.
Right. We got a question back here.
I'd like to know the far-reaching effects of a homeowner after a flood has occurred and what it does to your property value and the resale value of your property, what you have to do to bring it up to where it was.
You know, I yep. If you're a permitting person, you can touch on it.
Okay, Becca's going to finish.
This is why I take notes. I did forget two things. One is, if you have insurance, make sure that you're making your claim with your insurance company. Bring your insurance information in with you and your claim number in with you, because that will be needed as part of your documentation for this program. If you're not sure if the damage occurred was from the wind, if the windstorm was in the time frame of the windstorm or not, bring that information in, and we can work through that with you and find out for sure if that part is covered or not. I know that we have a very broad range on our declaration for that purpose. So bring it in, and we can help you through that. And then the other thing is, Team Rubicon is one of our volunteer agencies, and they're going to be coming up on Monday, I believe, to help people muck out basements and things like that. So if you're in need of assistance with cleanup, please give us a call. I'm going to give you a different number. It's 800 number. It's long distance here. So 1-800-478-2337. It's 478-2337. If you're in need of help with the cleanup, please let us know so we can put you in touch with our voluntary agencies. And we're hoping that 211 will be able to assist with gathering those names from people as well, if you can call 211 from your phone.
Can I say something? The Alaska Housing Energy Program is still available for people. If you've had some flood in problem with insulation, heating, and roofing, contact them, because they will still make the $10,000 available for any energy upgrades. And I think you can dovetail that with some repair work for any damage, for whatever cause you have it. So that's out there.
Could you repeat that number for help?
Yes, it's 1-800-478-2337. And if you are applying for other assistance, that information needs to come with you as well, because the way our system is set up, we can't duplicate efforts, but that doesn't mean you can't get assistance elsewhere and then also get assistance from us if your amount goes over that $15,700.
One thing I forgot to mention, in addition to roads and bridges, my department manages the landfill, and for the next 2 weeks, the Butte Transfer Station will be open 7 days a week, and if you bring in your flood debris, there will be no charge. There will be a form you fill out. We're calling it community cleanup efforts. So just bring it in, give it to, I think Cheryl's going to be there. I don't know if she'll be there 7 days, but she'll have a form there that you can fill out, and there will be no charge to throw away your flood-damaged stuff that Rebecca and Jeremy were talking about. So just that's one little... I forgot to mention that earlier. Yes, ma'am. Yes, the disaster damage, I'll put it that way. Disaster damaged items. It will start whenever the next day the landfill's open, and it will go for 2 weeks. All of the transfer sites, the landfill, the Butte, Willow, Talkeetna transfer sites will be no charge. I think Sutton as well. I don't know if Sutton will be open 7 days a week, but the other transfer sites in the landfill will be. Just tell them you're bringing in flood or disaster debris, and so you won't have to pay to throw away the stuff that got damaged.
Pickup. So how is he going to get his stuff there?
That the number that Rebecca gave you, that last 800 number, that would be the number you call.
It's the flood website again is flood.alaska.gov. I don't believe so. Jeremy, do you know?
It does have links to go to the borough.
The one I'm talking about, not to borough, to go to the flood, to go to the Facebook. If you're not a Facebook member, you don't get on. I don't want to be one. I don't want you to hear it.
Actually, the borough has been forwarding or referring people to that state site. We also have a public affairs press site that has all the information that's on Facebook. That's right, matsugov.us, and it's under press releases. Sure, matsugov.us, under press releases. Our last speaker, and we'll still take questions, but our last speaker is Michelle Olson. She tried to get up here before. She's the floodplain manager for the Matsu Borough.
All right, thanks for your patience, you guys. I'm going to try to go through this really quick, and then we'll get to questions. And I know a lot of you have questions, but if you'll hang with me, I'll try to get through this as fast as I can. As everybody said before me, document, document, document. I can't say it enough. Pictures, journals, lists, notes, keep it all. If you're not sure if you should keep it, keep it. Okay, take as many pictures as you can. Photographs, you know, a picture tells 1,000 words. So pictures are great. Use them. I personally have had my home flooded, not this time around, but I have in the past, so I really know what you guys are all going through, and I know what it's like to work through the insurance. It's not the easiest thing in the world. So trust me, document everything you can, okay? You will need a flood hazard development permit for any flood repairs in the flood zone. I know some of you already have permits for your existing structures. That's fine, but as soon as that flood hit, your property changed. So now you need a new permit to go forward with the flood repairs. Now, we are working through them as quickly as possible. We have a process in place to handle emergencies. We did not hold up DOT when they wanted to do some work the other day when the river was running. We let them do it. There's ways to work through the system. Call me. I will help you with anything I can. I will also have all the contact numbers for all the people here on the panel, and all the numbers that Becca gave you I will have as well. So if you can't find her number, call me. You will need a permit for anything. What does it say? The code actually says man-made change or improvement to unimproved or improved real estate, including but not limited to buildings, structures, mining, dredging, filling, gravel, paving, excavation, drilling, storage of equipment or materials, placing of a building. If you sneeze, you need a permit for it. I don't make these regulations. It's a federal regulation. Trust me, if it was up to me, it would be a little looser. But it's not. Right now, the cost is $100 for each permit. I am not excited about the fact that the permit costs money. Warren, would you like to say something about the cost of the permit? I'll let Warren say it.
Thank you.
Just what you need, a fee for a permit you don't even want. There is a fee associated with that. I spoke to Assembly Member Halter, whose area includes the Willow and Talkeetna areas, and there's been so we're gonna work out a way. We don't know what it is, but we're gonna work out a way to waive the fee for these floodplain permits in the short term. So that's one less thing to worry about. It's just a matter of, I'm not sure how we're gonna do it, but we will do it. It will go away.
Thank you, Oren. So for right now, all I can tell you is that today a fee is required. They're going to work on it. More on that later. Stay tuned.
Good question. Thank you.
So keep the receipt if you pay it. Bring it into the DAC. Bring it in whenever you meet with us if you can't make the deck, and we call you and we say, you call into our hotline and we call you back and say we need documentation. That needs to be part of your documentation. We can refund things involving NFIP programs, but like I said, we are maxed at $15,700, so I want to make sure that if the borough's already helping you with that, we don't want to duplicate that, and we're going to use that money to help you in other ways.
Okay, so I'd like you to document everything. The floodplain development permit does have a section in it that says you need a elevation certificate that you have to get from a surveyor. Right now, I'd like you to hold off on that. I'd like to look at the application first and see if we had our LIDAR project. We have elevations for all of your property from before the flood. So I would like the chance to look at your application and look at my LIDAR and see if I actually need any additional elevation before I ask you to spend money on it, okay? So please don't hire a surveyor yet. Just fill out the first three pages of the permit and bring it in to me. Also, as that gentleman asked about improving your property so that you maintain your home's value now that you've had a flood, if you build at or above the base flood elevation, you should be relatively safe from flooding. Now, you just had a flood, and it was a big flood. So if your house got wet, you know it needs to be lifted up. When you are going through your repair process, consider that. And know where your high water mark is. It's probably printed on the side of your house. And jack your house up a little bit above that. And that will improve your value, because you will be able to document, because you will turn in an application to me, and when your buyer and their lender call me and ask me, I'll be able to pull out my file and say, yep, it was this high, and they raised the house above it. So now it's relatively safe from flood, and that will help your value. I also want you to turn in your application to me and this form. In these little manila envelopes, I put these packages together. You have a form that looks like this, and you have an envelope that's addressed to me. Fill this out as soon as possible. Toss it in the mail. The reason I need to collect this is for you to get your insurance claim. Your insurance company is going to send me a note as the community official, and they're going to say, what happened? Tell us what happened. Tell us what was damaged. Tell us what they reported. If I don't know, I have to send you a letter and track you down so that I can answer the question for your insurance company. If I already have this in my file, I can pull it out, get the letter turned around to your insurance company in 5 minutes or less. So let's expedite your insurance claims by giving me this information. There's an envelope in your pouch. Just toss it in there and mail it back to me. It's simple. Also, I'd like you to be aware that there are a lot of out-of-state adjusters when we have a disaster like this. The insurance companies start calling people up from Alabama and Los Angeles and all over the globe to help handle the overflow. They sometimes use material rates for the lower 48, which we all know as Alaskans is not accurate here, and it won't be enough to cover the actual material costs. If you think you are being credited with a smaller amount than the actual Alaska rates for materials, that is appealable. You need to contact me, and I will work with our state floodplain administrator, Tawny Boothby, and we will work with you and help you appeal that decision, because they are required by FEMA to use local material rates and not the rates for Mississippi. Okay? What else did I want to make sure and say? There will be more press releases on Facebook and on our website. My cards are on the table. My phone number is on the application that's in the manila packet. You're welcome to call me with any questions. I may not know all the answers, but I sure as heck can try to help you figure out who does.
Okay, so questions. Yes. You can find it on our website, and you can also find it at FEMA.gov. The approved flood plan management? We have it.
If I could just interject a word on documentation, three or four people here have mentioned the importance of documenting it if you're intending to make a claim or file for assistance. I just like to reiterate that. I've been working with the Wenner family whose guest house went in the river and whose house is being undermined presently, and they've had considerable difficulty with their insurer. But don't underestimate the significance of documenting everything that has to do with whatever damage you may have incurred. And are we open for questions yet to other folks? Or?
We are. I was just going to say we've been going for an hour and a half, and we could start with questions on this side of the room and move across the room. And if we could stick to the subjects that these folks can answer, water quality and assistance.
I have a question on the behalf of a young lady and homeowner who's too shy to speak. And this is for the DOT folks, and it regards a bridge that you didn't mention, the Hunter Creek Bridge on the South Kinnick River Road. And I know you guys were there for perhaps a day making repairs there. This person is a landowner downstream of Hunter Creek along the bridge, and subsequent to the flooding or perhaps the repairs, she's getting a significant amount of erosion along her property line. So I wonder if someone from DOT would be willing to speak with her or take a look at her property. Things are different now than they were before the flood event and the bridge repairs.
If you could give me her name, I'll talk to her. Is she here? Why don't you raise your hand?
Her name is Winterson Youngblood.
I had a question at the beginning about the flood stage. Do you know the answer that Matanuska River never hit flood stage? Is that going to cause these people trouble getting?
I don't believe it is. The fact that the river did not hit the established flood stage does not change the fact that they were inundated with water. So, and it's very easy to document because there's a million pictures on Facebook. So, and I'd also like to remind you guys, too, that we do have that LIDAR study, and part of that is aerial photography. So we have aerial photography of all of your property. We have two sets, actually. We have one set, which is the maps on the wall, and that was taken April of 2011. And we have another set. We did an emergency flyby in June when the rivers were full because we wanted to see what the rivers look like at capacity. So we have a second set there. I don't know if any of your insurance companies are going to ask you to verify what it looked like before. If they do, we've got the footage. Just come and see me, and I'll get it for you.
A question for Becca. Do we need permits to come see you?
No. No, I am a very easygoing person. Just come see me and my team. My staff has been doing it for a really long time, and they'll be very helpful for you.
My question is actually about the permits. Again, with the meetings in the past, what I took away from them was there was the borough's plan was to let the river go ahead and do what it did, and then basically, well, unless... Why do we even want a permit to do anything, is what I'm asking.
Right.
Getting a permit.
Yeah, and I understand. I get it. Permits are not anybody's favorite thing, but they are a necessary evil. If you don't fill out the floodplain development permit, FEMA will not pay you any money. That's one of their criterias. They will look at your application. They will call me and say, does he have a permit? And if you don't, you don't get assistance. So the long and short of it is, fill it out. But to answer your question a little bit more thoroughly, it's always every property owner's choice whether they want to live in a dangerous situation or not. We're in Alaska. We have issues. We have earthquakes. We have floods. We have huge amounts of snow occasionally. We have all kinds of things. We don't have hurricanes and tornadoes, so I guess we can be happy about that. It's everybody's individual choice where they're going to live. Pardon me?
Oh, no. Yeah, we have hurricane force winds.
Yeah.
We just call them Wednesday.
Must
we don't, you know, name them as a storm. So it's your individual choice where you want to live. And if you want to restore your property, great. If you want to abandon your property, that's your choice, too. Right now, we do not have the funds to acquire property that isn't in dangerous zones. And possibly, if we get enough of these assessments that Becca's going to be working on, if the dollar amount goes high enough, maybe we'll get a federal declaration, and then a whole bunch more money will come available, and possibly some of that could be for acquisition. We don't know until it actually happens. We've been trying for years to find ways to acquire property along the Old Glen. We just don't have the means to do it. We have to do it through federal grants, and so far we don't qualify. But it is something we're thinking of. We're not just ignoring everybody. We just don't qualify yet.
If anyone has any questions on their septic, there is a representative from DEC. His name is Oren Woolley, and he's here. If anybody's got any of those questions.
I have a statement I'd like to make in response to that last comment. We do have the choice of where we want to live, but we also have a choice to manage some of these events. What happened in the Manitoska River was predictable and preventable.
How are we going to restore the property when the DOT there come and dig the mud road, release the flood to come to kill our property and cars and people and whatever, and we're going to protect our property down there? And how are we going to restore when next spring they're going to come back? I really appreciate you guys come to help us here today, but what are we going to do next day?
Right, and I understand your concern, Mr. Lena, and it's a tough one. Right now, we don't have the authority to go out and dredge the river. We just don't. And, you know, as the one gal said, in Circle View, the homeowners all formed a association, and they got their dikes. The dikes are in. They tax themselves to pay for the dikes. You folks along the Old Glen are welcome to do the same thing. You can set up a service area, and you can contribute for some dikes and have them placed and, you know, apply for the permits. I believe the other night, last week at the erosion meeting, they said there was 8 permits necessary to put those dikes in. I don't have the list of all the agencies involved, but there were 8. Any one of you is more than welcome to go apply for those. But it will take the same thing that Circle View did. All the homeowners will have to come together as a group. You will have to form a service area, and you will have to tax yourself to help pay for it.
Well, along that line, why wasn't the Mod Road dike fixed when it was flooding us? I mean, it's still not fixed.
I honestly don't know the
so
answer to that
gonna
question.
So it's going to happen again.
As soon as the water gets
two down. Truckloads of dirt in that thing would have stopped it like that. But no, they let it take 4 hours to get to my property. What the hell?
I'm really sorry that it got to your property, but I don't know the answer to that question. You go get all 8 permits and go for it.
Amir, let me answer your question. Okay. Okay, so for those of you that have been living here a lot longer than maybe I've been alive, I inherited the stuff before the event, and I'm working on that. So, and to answer, hold on, Pat. Let me answer Amir's question. The way I understood your question, Amir, is once something happened at the Mod Road dike, then your property got flooded, correct? Okay, and so then that's going to be... Hold on. So there's going to be, I'm not quite sure how to really answer your question as to place liability on what happened. If you weren't flooded before and then that was a direct consequence of something that we did, that's something we'll have to talk about because and get the information from you and then try to figure out where to go with that. Does that make sense? Because I don't know. I don't have the answer right now for you.
The fire department 911. I did call the people. They show up there and they told me they don't have enough Sandex. So my neighbor come with the bag or with the cat there. I have to plug it my own to protect myself and to protect all the neighborhood down there. And they walked away. You called me 11 o'clock in the midnight and I told you be safe down there and let everybody to die now.
So now are we talking about two different things, about when you first got flooded or after? No.
The first and the second day was keep coming in the water from the rival park and also from the dike site.
Okay.
Was a danger and nobody cared. Everybody was walking away.
Okay, so I cared and I showed up. I just want to say that I was there till 2:30 in the morning, making sure.
You come late, but you show up.
That's. So I'm not the only one, Pat. I know that that's what it might seem, but since I'm managing this now and that's my job to manage this, it's going to be me out there at 2:30 in the morning, making sure that everybody downstream of that property is safe and making that decision on whether or not to go knock on doors and evacuate people again. So. Where we go back to the first part, from what I understood the question right, if the property wasn't flooding before some work was done to protect something else, and then your property flooded, then that's another avenue that I'm not going to be necessarily involved with. But I will let you know who you're going to have to talk to get that resolution. Okay?
I mean, was not fair, the DOT there, to go there with their equipment to protect their site and let the public say, hey, who care for you guys?
So, well, that's...
And I'm the one being burned in this area and probably in all Alaskan, more than $150,000 damage on it, and I'm not going to make it a big deal, but I wanted to see it for the next step, next future. What are we going to do? If it's not safe area to be built there, through the permit, the paper away in the garbage, and they tell the built area, we have to move from here. It's not safe area because everybody, DOT and the state workers, they're watching with taking a picture and doing nothing.
So, you're right, Patty. You might not get that knock. And so, so we can't predict everything that's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. That's why it's called a disaster. If we had the form of government where we could call you on the phone as soon as the water level got to a certain point, we would have people staffing those things 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365, it's just not a possible thing for us in our government, in our area of the Mat-Su Borough. It's just not there. And so that's why making sure that you're prepared for that stuff and listening when I start to send out those messages, hey, the water's getting a little high, maybe we need to start thinking about this, and build that resiliency in. I can't make you do anything. I can't. No, to answer that question. I know it's a facetious one, but no. So one of the parts about this now being a disaster, if it gets declared a federal disaster, then that opens up debris debris removal costs. And if that stuff is in the river and it's a federal disaster, then the federal government will pay for that debris to be moved. No, because that's a whole other pot of stuff. So if it goes federal and there's debris still in the water or along the roads, that kind of stuff, the federal government comes in and pays for debris removal. And so your pictures that you've taken, all that documentation that you've done for that, will go in and the house and the septic systems and all that stuff will be gone. If it goes federal. Excuse me?
Okay, wait.
No, not for debris management and debris removal after a federal disaster, no.
Okay, we've got some people that have been waiting for a while to speak, so let's raise your hand and I'm going to get to you in order, okay? This gentleman has been waiting for a while, so let's let him talk.
Hello, I find it strange that we pay taxes and then I hear from some of the people talking to us here that keep saying, you guys tax yourself, you guys go get permits and stuff. That's supposed to be your job. And the other thing is, Congress isn't in session. How come Don Young isn't here helping his constituents?
I can't answer the second question because I don't know. The first question, I can't answer your second question because I don't know. The first question, I'm not quite sure of the community taxation. That's not, I don't care about that. I go to where I'm needed. Okay, and so, and we will all do that. That's an assembly question. Sorry to point the finger, Warren, at you, but let's keep moving on. And
from what I understood on the issue of permits, that you didn't need a permit unless you changed the footprint of your property over 700 square feet, and that the permit operation of the borough was not intended to make money. Obviously it has, because we have code compliance guys running around with brand new pickups and all that kind of good stuff. They've been to the police academy and that type of thing. Now, if you're doing repair on the inside of your property, you're not changing the footprint of your property at all. You're doing repairs on the inside. Why do you need a permit for that? The other part of my question is, who is responsible for the poor engineering that we were allowed to build a home on a particular piece of property? The Army Corps of Engineers was involved stating about the floodplains. I happen to live in a floodplain X, which is the lowest floodplain, one of the lower floodplains, but I'm flooded. I am flooded. My basement is completely flooded.
I definitely want your address, sir. To answer the first part of your question, FEMA's regulations cover what's called substantial damage. If your home is damaged more than 50% of its value, and that does not include the land, that is the value of the home. So if you have to rip out carpets, sheetrock, insulation, I can tell you you're pushing 50% already, because none of that stuff is cheap. And again, it's FEMA's regulation, not mine. I can tell you that our permits do not generate even 25% of what it costs for staff to process them, but we have to do them because it is a federal regulation. We don't have the option. If we decide we're not going to do any permitting, we are no longer members of the NFIP program. If we are no longer members, if the borough as a whole is no longer a participating community in NFIP, there is no flood insurance available to any home in the borough. If that happens, all your mortgages, when you're in a floodplain, have a clause in there, and the clause says you will carry federally required flood insurance or your mortgage will become due and payable. So you will be paying off your mortgage the day after your flood insurance goes away. Therefore, it behooves us as a community to be members of the NFIP so that the 6,000 homes that are in flood zones around the borough are eligible for flood insurance so that they can obtain mortgages and that maintains their property value.
Just a minute, please. Can I have a chair first, please?
My question's for Becca, okay. My wife and I are about to be in your hip pocket. we rent. Our place was made an island estate out here in the Butte. And for the first couple of days, except for walking through knee-deep water, that was pretty cool. But our house is no longer livable. You know, the septic's gone, the well's tainted, and, you know, I rent, so I'm not going to go to the expense of doing what that. So I'm going to be doing all the things you've said to do. I'm going to call your numbers and all that. How long do I have to wait before I get help? Because right now, I'm living with my sister. And as most of us know, living with brothers and sisters doesn't last too long.
I know. I feel your pain there. I limit my time with my brothers. See me today. Anybody else in that same situation where they don't have a place tonight? If you do know of anybody like that, please have them call the 800 number that I gave you that is active now. That would be that 800-478-2337, and we'll get you assistance.
Okay, this, as far as I see, will be our last question. We're kind of running out of time. They're giving us the finger, the sign here to go. Hang on a second.
My homeowner's insurance policy is with Allstate, and I was told by my agent when we purchased that because I was in a floodplain X, that we weren't in a floodplain, and therefore I could not buy flood insurance. He states now, and 2 days after I called, told me that, yes, I am in a floodplain, but it's X. And the insurance is going to cost me $400 a year for flood insurance. Mm-hmm. But he told me 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that I couldn't get it.
And I can't do anything about that, but I can tell you that every insurance company has the ability to write a flood policy whether you are in a flood zone or not. That is not a requirement for getting flood insurance. I live over on Bodenburg Loop. I do not live in a flood zone, and I have a flood policy on my home because I live in a big flat spot and snow melts. So your insurance company, I can't speak to that, but it is possible, whether you're in a flood zone or not, to acquire flood insurance.
We had one question up front.
Okay. Some of these folks are going to stick around for a few minutes afterwards, and you can approach them with your specific questions, but I wanted to thank you for coming out tonight.